Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello. My name is Johnny Cash.
And this is wonderful.
I did sort of a mixture of like Johnny Cash, but also Borat. Did you like that? Because my voice sounds so wild, and I started to talk, and I realized, hey, this is kind of not a bad Johnny Cash. But then it turned into a Borat, but then I saved it with going back to Johnny Cash.
Most things with you turn into a Borat, I've noticed.
That does happen, but that's because of my affliction. And you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Boratus. I got it. I went to the movie theater, and I saw it. And, let's just say a curse was laid upon me that day. And I talk about Borat a lot. I apologize. My voice sounds like a trash compactor trying to compact another trash compactor.
Ooh, I think is what I would. Good. Yeah, that's apt.
Yeah, it sounds like a bunch of broken glass rolling down a mountainside is what I think it kind of sounds like. Mm-hmm. And I apologize for that. But we're here and we're going to do an episode wonderful for you, like we are contractually obligated to do. No, that's not true. We do it because it's fun and we love each other. Isn't that right?
That is, both are true.
Do you still love me even though I sound like Tom Waits, sort of coarser, older brother, Ron Waits?
I do.
And his like deep, even more baritone brother, Ron Waits.
Yeah, I do actually.
Do you think he ever says, Tom waits for no man? Like if somebody's like running late for like,
that's good.
Like he's supposed to meet him at a movie and he goes, Tom waits for no man, he says. And then everybody loves it.
Yes, I do.
I'm high on Dayquil.
Mm-hmm. It could also be like, excuse me, are you waiting for this? It's like, no, I'm Tom Waits for this.
Yeah, and they'll be like, no, I know. What are you waiting for? There's a lot of really good sort of comedy there.
But I think we should go back to Borat because that's really...
Yeah, that's where I really operate.
Core competency.
Wizard Sleeve. Do you want to tell me about a small wonder that you have?
I do, actually.
Go for it.
So on the YouTube...
Yeah.
Wired. Are you familiar with Wired?
Sure.
They have this autocomplete interview series. It's like 80 plus videos, and it's usually one or two celebrities promoting a movie. And they get on and they type their name, or somebody types their name into Google. And so it'll be like, Tom Hanks is, and then they'll rip off the little thing and it'll complete
what the
filter is. And so the celebrity is there and they are responding to a lot of questions. And a lot of the questions are like, Mila Kunis is vegan? Or where is Mila Kunis now? And so you get to see these like celebrities answer these fun queries about them. I enjoy it.
That sounds fun.
It is fun.
I want to say Stardew Valley's on iPhone now. And I'm just, that's it. That's all you get of me, usefulness. That's all the sort of productivity you get out of me. You've gotten, this is the last podcast sort of thing you're going to get, I think, out of me, Griffin McElroy. I hope you've enjoyed my career. Thank you for sticking along for the ride.
If you were going to a desert island.
Yeah.
And it came down to Stardew Valley or Animal Crossing.
Oh, damn.
Which do you bring?
Probably
I know.
Which Animal Crossing? Because there's been like nine of, like my favorite, the best one?
Yes.
Shoot. Well, here's the thing. If I'm living on the island, I'm basically already doing Animal Crossing. So I'm going to say Stardew Valley.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. Hey, do you want to let me talk about my first thing?
I do.
Okay. My first thing is jumping in a big old pile of leaves.
Oh, that's nice.
I can see my sound waves while we record. I've never quite seen mine so spaced this far apart before. It's like my microphone is picking up the individual clicks that my vocal cords make as they slap together like two big wet pieces of meat. But anyway, I want to talk about jumping in a big old pile of leaves. We went on a fun trip together with our son up to Ely, Minnesota, is like 4 hours north of Minneapolis, and had a fun little cabin weekend. When we came back, all the leaves have fallen. There's a nice leaf pile. And Henry just played around in those leaves, and it was so majestic, so wonderful. It was such a fun, cute time and a really great photo op.
It was adorable to watch him figure out kind of what one does with leaves.
Yes. He had never really played with leaves before, and seeing him be like, oh, yes, these are great. This is like fun confetti that the earth makes. It's just good, man. Jumping in a pile of leaves, just sort of concentrated good. It's remarkable that essentially tree hair turns into a stunt cushion once a year. Do you know what I mean?
A stunt cushion. Okay. Okay, I see what you're saying.
Like, it's wild.
Yeah.
And that's if you really abstractly think about it, like, you're having fun with this big pile of leaves, and the tree just made those.
If I asked you to describe it a different way.
Yeah.
Do you got another one in the chamber?
It's like forest dandruff that turns into jump zone.
Okay.
Anyway, I just, seeing him splash around in those leaves really took me back to just simpler, better times. Uh-huh. It's just such a classic autumnal activity that I used to enjoy quite a bit, because growing up in West Virginia, there are trees for days. Trees for days, I say. And they would all shed, and I would jump right into them. I did mm-hmm. so much leaf pile jumping. I was not a very outdoorsy kid, or teenager, or young adult, or adult. I will not be an adventurous, outdoorsy grandpa, I bet.
I would like to raise an outdoorsy child. Though
this is a good city to do that in, but I did do leaf pile jumping because mm-hmm. it was so fun and it was so rewarding. There are also, so there's a, this controversial topic. There's a lot of controversy about this topic because a lot of people say don't jump in the leaf pile because if it's wet, it can get moldy, and also you don't know if there's bugs in there, and also you don't know if there's debris in there. And here's the thing.
Can I tell you, I was stifling those instincts as he was doing it.
I know, me too.
I was thinking, like, this might end up being gross for him. But I was like, you know what? Don't be that person right now.
Don't be that person. I feel like there was a buzz, like 2016. There was a lot of buzz, as if we needed more things to be buzzy about in 2016. That was like, no more leaf piles. I remember seeing an article that was like, do a scarecrow instead. Shut the front door with that kind of dookie garbage. Are you kidding me? That's a complete different thing. You're like making a fake guy.
Unless you lay the scarecrow down on the ground
and jump on
it. Jump on it.
I don't want to scare birds, internet. It's like, take care of your young ones, but scare the shit out of birds. They didn't do anything either. But anyway, I was trying to find scientific reasons for why jumping in leaf piles is good. I had some trouble, as you might imagine. I'm sure there's some sort of like psychological benefit. It's fun. Gets the endorphins pumping, blood pumping, good activity, good exercise.
The crickly crackly sound.
The crickly crackly sound is like ASMR. What I found, though, the scientific reason to do it, crushed leaves decompose faster than whole leaves, which leaves less time for those leaf piles to develop mold and diseases and stuff in them, because they decompose faster because you crushed them all up with your bod. And that's science right there.
And that is a reason to run into your neighbor's yard and say, I'm going to jump in these just to save you from some mold.
Well, the only reason you shouldn't jump in a leaf pile is if the person who just sorted it into a pile asks you specifically not to do it. But even then, come on. I don't think they can blame you, right? It's a good leaf pile. Mm-hmm. One time I went down a slide into a leaf pile when I was visiting my nanny's house. A spider bit me right on the hand. It got so big and fat. And I will admit, I got out of the game a little bit for a while after that. But it's been long enough that now I can say leaf piles are good. Just keep your hands out of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because spiders love these
guys. So when you jump in, you're suggesting hands up over the head?
Yeah.
Like, straight up?
You should be doing that anyway, because you're having a fucking great time jumping into the leaf pile. Anyway, I love leaf piles. What's your first thing?
My first thing is friendship.
Okay. We are really getting really, really very, very abstract.
I was surprised we hadn't talked about friendship, because I feel like I distinctly remember you making a lot of friends goofs when we were on the show, and I assumed it came from us talking about friends.
Friends, the TV show?
Yes.
Oh, I talk about Friends a lot on this show?
I feel like you make a lot of Friends references just in your day-to-day.
I found out that I don't know how to... I'm sort of a day walker to make a Blade reference when it comes to Chandler. I say Chandler sometimes, I say Chandler sometimes. And I'm not entirely sure which is the correct one, even though I've seen every episode of Friends, I bet. I don't know if it's Chandler or Chandler. This is like the...
It's Chandler.
It's like the Berenstain Bears, like...
Oh, my gosh.
The Mandela Effect. I don't know. Is it Chandler or Chandler? Take a poll.
It's Chandler, baby.
It could be Chandler.
There's chandelier.
Yeah.
Which is a real thing.
I want to swing from the chandelier. I still got it. Even when my pipes are really bad, I can still open them up and get some Sia out of them.
So I bring this up because while we were in Minnesota, we were with some dear friends of ours. And I just felt very grateful to be at our age when it becomes harder to have friendships as an adult, I think.
I think starting at like 24, it starts becoming a lot harder to make friends.
Yeah, when you finish any kind of schooling that you're pursuing and all of a sudden your only, you know, adult contact is in the workplace,
right,
it becomes difficult. There's a lot of benefits to having friends.
I imagined that was true before you listed off some facts.
But some of them are health benefits.
Oh, okay.
In a 2010 meta-analysis that combined data on more than 308,000 people across 148 studies, researchers found a strong connection between social relationships and lifespan.
Oh, wow.
The size of the effect rivaled that of better-known health-related behaviors such as smoking and exercise.
Does that count like Twitter followers? Because I got a 250,000 of those. I am Zool. I will live. I will outlive you all.
No, babe.
They're each my friend. I know them all by name. I have not tweeted in a month.
Do you want to name just like, I don't know, like 100 of them?
Oh, yeah. There's Dr. Pepperdick, 420.
Yes.
He is always cracking me up.
Yes.
There's Chim-chim-charoo.
Is the roo zeros?
Yeah, it's all zeros.
Okay, so I'm friends with the one that has the letters and not the zeros.
Oh, that one sucks.
Hey,
nah,
it's my friend.
The zeros one is where it's at. He's got the best sort of like political stuff going on there.
A 2015 analysis that compiled data on more than 3.4 million people across 70 studies found that the absence of social connections carried the same health risk as smoking up to 15 cigarettes a day.
Okay. Science, I'm all about you. But sometimes you do shit that is so wild. Because it's like, I lived in Chicago and I didn't really have any friends. Well, I had the people I lived with, but I didn't really make
and
a lot of friends there.
I
smoked a bit.
It was a dangerous time for you.
I guess so. I guess at that point, you can either have friends and smoke or not have friends and not smoke?
Can I say when I met you after you moved here from Chicago, you did seem a little unhealthy.
Yeah, but then I made friends.
Mm-hmm. And now you're a vital, vigorous man.
Now I'm a fucking vision of health. Look at me. Look at me. I'm fucking...
This is your healthy voice.
This is my healthsome voice. The rest of the time I've been sick. I get very high-pitched and nasally when I'm sick. This is the low baritone is kind of where I operate. I haven't been able to sing with my barbershop quartet for like fucking 8 years now.
Mm-hmm. What are the names of the people in your barbershop quartet? I haven't met them yet.
Yeah, there's Skillet and Busy Bill and Scroat.
What's the name of the alto in
the
there?
Alto is Altone Brown.
That's nice.
Yeah, he thinks it's funny. I do not. I tell him every time. I was like, your name sucks, dude. It really is Alton Brown.
So as Griffin mentioned, it is hard to make adult friends, as a study published in 2006.
Sorry, y'all. There's a boil notice going on. We all have to drink bottled water. I don't know how to do it quietly.
There are a lot of things you don't know how to do quietly, Griffin.
Whoa.
People had an average of about 3 friends they felt they could discuss important things with in 1984. By 2005, the average number of confidants had dropped to about 2.
There's not much more it can drop. I feel like this is the countdown to the end of civilization. If it hits 0,
at the end of the study, close to 25% of respondents said they didn't have anyone they could trust.
Oh my God.
Triple the proportion from 2 decades earlier.
It is so bad.
It's bad out there, guys.
But we have each other. I think we're lucky enough.
We have each other and we have wonderful friends.
We have wonderful friends.
We've had for a very long time.
For a very long time. It's so important to have, and I think that, like, I give internet a lot of shit. And a lot of that I think is pretty well deserved. But I also think that it is an incredible way of, like, finding the communities that give you this kind of support. And I don't know. I think that I was very, very antisocial in my, like, sort of traveling, wandering days. But if I'd had something like that, I don't know, it probably would have been a lot easier.
I have always been lucky to have a decent group of friends.
That's true.
But I will say that not all of them were especially decent. But I am lucky.
More Fremenies, right?
Fremenies? Frenemies.
Mm-hmm.
Leah Fremeny.
Damn you.
It wasn't even that funny,
it
I don't
was.
Think.
It was really fucking funny. God, I take my fucking hoodie off for that.
So I just wanted to bring it up because one thing I've noticed when you develop, like, a real good lasting relationship is that you can just check in every once in a while. You don't have to be all on the ball.
That's
you know,
true.
Like our friends that moved to Minnesota that we were visiting, we don't get to see very often. We don't get to talk to very often, but it, you know, just a few kind words here and there really, really make it last. I like to, because I'm uncomfortable a little bit with sincerity face to face.
Oh yes.
I like to send a good email every once in a while that just says, hey, here's some things that I appreciate about you and I miss you.
Yeah. When me and Scroat had the big fight, we didn't talk for 26 years. But then I wrote him a really nice email. We were 6 when we started the group.
Okay, in your barbershop. You were 6 when you started your barbershop quartet. How much do I love the idea of 6-year-olds?
A 6-year-old named Scroat? I'm not crazy about that.
No, doing a barbershop quartet together with the little red and white vests.
Yeah, sure.
Just harmonizing.
That could be fun. It's definitely a lot more innocent than what I was suggesting. Friendship is great. Can I steal you away? I could see how low I can go with this voice.
Yeah, I think you should take a crack at it.
Let me see. Let me. I've been working on my scales in piano class. Let me start with the lowest I can do, and then I'll work down from there. Okay. What's that do it for you?
I mean, I wanted to say it was good, but that would imply that I liked it.
It was, it can be good and you not like it.
Okay. That's what it was then.
It was like a tree of life for me when I saw that flick. I was like, yeah, good. Never again, though.
Mother.
Mother.
Father.
Fafa.
Hey, Griffin.
Yeah.
I got some personal messages.
Oh, you hacked into their accounts and you're going to read all their, just leak all their dirty laundry.
Mm-hmm. This message is for Bruce, Hillary, Cheyenne, Zoe, Lily, and Caroline.
Oh, got the dirt on all of them, juicy.
It's from Donnie. Hey, this is Donnie. Bruce, Hillary, Cheyenne, Zoe, and Lily. Y'all are like family to me and the best of people I could have around. I love you all. Just thought you should know. Caroline, it's been a wonderful 6 months at the time of this writing. Just wanted to let you know how much I love and appreciate you. Love you, Blady. And in parentheses, beautiful lady.
Well, and also she has retractable blades coming out of her fingernails.
Ooh.
Yeah, like the Wolverine or the Deathstroke, Deathstrike. There's another sort of X-Man character who... Anyway, do you have another message?
I do have another message.
I am so sorry that my my Dayquil mush mouth is so offensive to you.
This message is for Jeffrey. It is from Lindsay. Oh, this is going to be fun.
Oh, good.
Jeffrey, do you want to go look at houses with me, Jeffrey? You are my sweet peach and my favorite boy. I'm so grateful to have you in my life with Maritime Bus as my witness. Just know that I'm sending you smooches and shooting you double finger guns. Oh, and Jeffrey, we should do this again sometime.
It's a sweet message.
That's a My Brother and Me reference.
It's an old school one, too.
Yeah.
Is it bad I can't even see the word peach without thinking about, I could eat a peach for hours?
I thought you were going to say the Mario Brothers.
No, I was doing the
Nicolas Cage.
The other one. I could eat a peach for hours. This voice makes that fun to say, doesn't it? I could eat a peach for hours.
Wait, let me try it.
Yeah.
I could eat a peach for hours.
Damn it, that's really good too.
Hmm.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. Hi, everybody. My name is Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
And together we're the hosts of Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. What does that mean for you, the podcast consumer? Well, it means that you're going to get a lot of stories about how we used to do weird stuff to people in order to try to fix them.
Do you know that we used to think diseases were caused by bad smells? And that we used to eat mummies for medicine?
That's super funny. I kind of like it.
Well, thanks, and we hope you'll kind of like our show, Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. It's available every Friday wherever fine podcasts are sold, or at its beautiful, picturesque home at
MaximumFun.org.
All right. Yeah.
Do you want to know my second thing?
Yes.
My second thing is alien. And I'm not being like, I'm not doing like weird speak when I say that. It's literally the movie Alien.
Oh, do you mean Alf?
No, no. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes. Did they ever make an Alf movie? Because if not, they left. They did make a cartoon movie.
They did. And they made like a TV special that was like movie length.
And it was like how to keep kids off drugs. And it was like Bugs Bunny was in it. Fucking Alf was in it. Like everyone was in it. It was a free rental at Blockbuster. I watched that fucking tape a lot. No, I want to talk about Alien. Alien the movie.
The Sigourney Weaver?
The Sigourney Weaver movie. And I wanted to bring a spooky movie. This is our last episode before Halloween. So I wanted to bring some autumnal ass stuff. And I wanted to bring a scary movie, and I was trying to think of like what's a good one that holds up well and, you know, is fun and important, I guess, to talk about. And when I think about it, man, I think Alien is like the best of them.
Yeah.
It's certainly among the best of them. I struggled with whether I wanted to bring Alien or Aliens because I enjoy both of those movies.
They're both very good.
Very much mm-hmm. in the same way. If you've never seen them, Alien is a very slow burn sort of survival horror story.
Yeah, the first half hour of it, if I remember, is
a lot of setup and yeah. a lot of like hard sci-fi, and then it's a story of just like there's an alien on our ship, what are we gonna do? The second one is let's get the big guns and go and kill all the fucking aliens, hoo-ah. And it's fun too, like it's still like a really really good flick, but it is a lot different. I landed on just talking about Alien because I think it's a really incredible movie. It came out in 1979. It was Sigourney Weaver's like first starring role and kind of launched her career. So it is important in that sense. What I find so fascinating, I love horror movies. I've seen them. I've seen many, many, many of them. What I like about Alien is like it set up this whole franchise, right? They've made a million Alien movies at this point. And I think Alien also sort of created its own, or not created, but sort of popularized this sci-fi horror genre that, like, you know, arguably like The Fly was a part of and all this. Really, Alien is a very like by the book horror movie. If you compare it to like Friday the 13th or Halloween, or like it is kind of the same where it's like, here's the characters, here's the protagonist, here's the setup for what the monster is. Now that's the first half of the movie. Second half of the movie is now that we've made this like sandbox, let's see what happens.
Yeah,
folks.
It's just like nonstop after that.
It's so fascinating. Like it doesn't really break from that tradition at all. And so in that sense, you kind of know what's going to happen next, but it's still like extremely tense and really, really, really scary.
Well, and the aliens themselves are like unlike anything really that's been was seen before, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like most monsters were kind of very obviously people in suits.
Sure.
In previous horror movies. And that's not really the case with aliens. I don't even know how they put those folks together.
It was still a person in a suit. Yeah. It was just a really expertly made suit. So the aliens are sort of the highlight of this whole franchise, right? And what is really fascinating about them is there's a lot of things that are fascinating about them. First of all, like this movie spends a lot, this movie and Alien spends a long ass time like teaching you the physiology of these aliens in a way that I think is really fascinating. It's like you're taking like a biology class on these aliens while you're watching the movie. It's like, okay, here's their blood is made out of acid. Here is their whole reproductive cycle. Like every movie adds a new step to their reproductive cycle. Like, and now you know all of this, and it sets you up for what's about to happen.
I feel like Jurassic Park got a lot from Alien when you think about it that way.
Yeah, I think so too.
You spend a lot of time discussing like how the dinosaurs work before you see the dinosaurs.
Yeah, for sure. But as for like the aesthetic of the alien, because I agree, like you look at monster movies, everything in the past, like nothing holds a candle to Alien.
In the first Alien, do you see like the little alien that comes out of the mouth of the bigger alien? Does that happen in the first movie? It's iconic thing, and
it does.
Fascinating to me.
Yeah.
I like thinking about like a little griffin coming out of the mouth.
You like thinking about that?
Of just like a little griffin with little glasses coming out of your mouth. So like you lean in to smooch me and then like a littler griffin comes out and smooches me first.
You would enjoy that, you're saying.
I'm just exploring. Once. I'm exploring that idea.
Oh, you want to play?
What are we doing?
Let's save this.
Which one of us is on the Dayquil? That's what I'm
wondering. Let's save this pillow talk for later. What do you say? So they were designed by H.R. Giger. So I don't know how much you know about his work. He's a Swiss artist who basically just like who does a bunch of fucked up shit. Like I don't know how to describe his art except for like deeply, deeply, deeply unsettling. Actually, The Alien was largely based off of this one painting that he had. I cannot remember the name of it. I'll see if I can find it. Hold on. Okay, he had this series of illustrations called Necronom. There's one called Necronom 4 that he put out in 1976 that was just sort of this like surrealist monster, essentially. And if you come over and look at it real quick.
Oh, yeah. It's got like the head and the big eyes and the whole
structure. I mean, it does. It's more dick-like, I would say. Way more pee-pee-like, for sure. But that's the xenomorph, essentially, which is what the alien's called. And like that's why it looks so different, right? Like you tagged in this like surrealist Swiss artist to design your shit. Like that's incredibly wild for you
that is a
wild thing for you to do. It's just like a wild investment, but it's so clearly paid off, right? Because it established this thing as like a new thing to be scared of, which is something that like horror movies still like struggle with, and I think they always will, is trying to say like here's the new thing to be scared of. It Follows was so great because it's a new thing to be scared of. It's a source of terror that's never
and Aliens got really hot after that movie. I feel like into the 80s all of a sudden like everything was alien related.
Baseballs.
Well, I'm talking like ET
for sure.
The aforementioned Alf.
Alf is definitely inspired by Alien in so many ways, I feel like.
And then, you know, Alien Autopsy. You remember that one?
What?
It wasn't a movie. It was like a television show where they dissected an alien.
It's a TV show called Alien Autopsy?
You just Google it real fast. I think it was on Fox, and the suggestion was that it was an autopsy of a real alien.
This was a TV movie from 1995. Rachel... You can't reference TV movies from 1995 starring Jonathan Frakes in it, babe. That's a really deep, deep cut. That may be the deepest cut that's ever been made on.
I was thinking it was a television show.
It was a TV movie.
Oh.
That's a really deep pull. Anyway, this movie rules. The aesthetic of like the whole movie, the ship in the first movie like also looks really cool. Like they didn't try to like sci-fi it up. It looks very much like if there were spaceships in the 1980s, what they would look like. Like it was 1979 when this movie came out. It was like they said, what if there were spaceships in 1989? And let's see what that's like.
Yeah, exactly.
It looks very like there are parts of the ship that look like really comfortable and like lived in. Mm-hmm. And that makes it like all the scarier when that place is sort of violated by this terrifying, unkillable monster.
That's very true. And also, I mean, can we mention like how awesome Sigourney Weaver is?
Like, she's fucking
like
awesome.
The character of Ripley and like the performance. So good.
Yeah. This movie is like top to bottom, like, I always feel shitty talking about like horror movies this way. where it's like, well, it's not just a good horror movie. It's like a good movie, because that suggests that like we rate horror movies on a different scale. But I also think that Alien is maybe one of the best movies ever made and is also like very, very scary. And I want to watch it because we haven't this spooky season.
Yeah, we haven't dipped into spooky, but I'd be into watching Alien.
Let's do it. What's your second thing though first?
My second thing, playgrounds.
All right.
I have been really excited to have Henry be at an age where he appreciates playground, because I have always loved them.
I have too. Did you have one growing up that was like your spot?
I mean, there was a church near my house that had a playground that I used to like to walk to and like hang out with friends when they came over.
Nice. And they were cool with that?
The church?
Yeah.
Well, as far as I know.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I didn't like knock on the door and ask them if I could use their playground.
Okay.
I like always get excited to go to one. I don't know if you have that experience. Like when we take Henry to the playground, I'm like legitimately psyched to be there.
Yeah, I do for sure. Especially like going to a new one, seeing what kind of playground innovations, because there certainly are some playground innovations.
That's very true. They're actually much safer now.
Well, I don't know. There's a zip line at my old playground now, which wasn't there before. So that seems demonstrably unsafe.
So playgrounds actually started in Germany in 1850. The founder of kindergarten, Friedrich Froebel, promoted the importance of free play as well as nature play for children. His model kindergarten plans emphasized the need for opportunities for contact with natural materials. The kindergarten movement spurred the use of sandboxes in German schools and homes.
Interesting. So that was like the touching natural materials idea?
Sandbox is like where it all started. The introduction of, quote, sand gardens to America was prompted by Dr. Marie Zakruska, who, while visiting Berlin in 1885, observed children's playing in heaps of sand. She wrote a letter to the Massachusetts Emergency and Hygiene Association, which resulted in a large heap of sand being placed near the West End Nursery in Boston.
Can you imagine all of those Bostonian kids just like
a pile of sand?
So we're just supposed to
just get in there,
jump in,
get in there.
We're just supposed to jump in the sand.
I mean, is it any better or worse than a leaf pile?
It's probably a lot worse because it's a lot harder. It's sand.
Well, you can build stuff with sand.
That's true.
So she
I wanted to do a Boston accent there, but I've forgotten how a Boston accent sounds. You just want me to jump in the sand?
I'd be so terrible if you couldn't have remembered that.
You want me to jump on the sand?
Okay, you're getting in a weird place now.
Boston, back behinds. Boston, back behinds. Ball, Red Sox.
So by 1899, there were 21 sand gardens.
It's just like Wikipedia is just like, we know exactly how many sandboxes there were in existence 119 years ago.
So shortly after, in 1905, Henry S. Curtis, who was the director of the DC Playground System, and Luther Gulick, who was the director of physical education in the New York City school system, joined together to form a National Playground Association, which was officially formed at the YMCA in D.C., and it was designed to promote ideas of playgrounds to communities, including benefits, construction, layout, and design, and the conduct and activities to occur on the playgrounds.
This is so alien to me, this idea of just like we needed people to gin up playgrounds. It seems so like, what if we had toys that like kids could come and play with as a community? Yeah, it seems like.
I think people didn't really see the benefits of play until much later.
I guess that's
in
true.
In history. So the next kind of big moment in playgrounds was in the 1940s and 50s. That's when adventure or junk playgrounds were started.
Oh.
So it was a large lot stocked with building materials. This was started, it was actually started in Denmark, but then moved to London in 1946. The concept was that there would be puddles, hills, grass, and no asphalt. The main features were to be, one, enough pipes, ropes, bricks, lumber, hammers, and nails. Where with very little supervision, children could build and paint playthings that they wanted, like swings, treehouses, and forts.
Oh, God. Okay.
So
you're almost there, guys. You almost got there.
On one hand, it's kind of beautiful, right? Like, kind of like Legos. Like, give the kids opportunities.
There ain't no nail Lego. Ain't no sharp Legos. Ain't no sharp Legos.
But yes, also very dangerous. The other key tenant was a central pavilion for children to get in out of the rain to hold meetings.
To hold about all of their injuries, where they would do triage on each other. Well, he's got 7 nails. You've only got 4 nails in your hand, so we're going to take him to the hospital first.
I think we should stop throwing the hammer at each other. Jimmy, what do you think? Well, I don't know. It's pretty fun.
Seconded.
The first adventure playgrounds were staffed by workers called, quote, wardens.
Oh, my God.
Their job was to unlock the tool sheds at the playgrounds and observe the children at play, assisting them only as necessary so as not to lead activities.
Like Jeff Probst on Survivor.
Exactly.
You got to let them get hurt.
The workers eventually became known as play workers.
It's a lot better than instead of wardens, for sure.
1950s through 70s.
Play workers, though, is very, very, it's very 1984.
Oh.
Isn't that like,
I guess a little bit.
I do play work. It's good. It's double good.
To me, it makes me think more of, you know, kind of the arbitrary name like retail employees are given to.
Yeah, sorry. It took me a while to remember what the year was from the big book. It's so bad in here.
Like at Barnes & Noble, you're not like a cashier, you're a bookseller.
Yeah, for sure.
It's kind of like you're a play worker.
I was a sales associate at GameStop.
Oh, well, yeah, that's what I was at Sally Beauty Supply.
It's a garbage term. It doesn't mean anything.
So in the 1950s through 70s, that's when you started to see novelty playgrounds, which were the things with like rocket ships and animal shapes and tunnels, all made of metal.
And no hammers?
No hammers this time.
That's some bullshit.
But everything was made of metal, so you could still hurt yourself.
Okay, good.
And then the 70s and 80s is when you started to see more of the rounded edges and hard plastic equipment. 1980s to the present is when you saw more of a emphasis on safety.
Yeah, I would say so.
So I remember from my youth, we had the wood chips, which you still see today.
Mm-hmm.
You also see a lot of that kind of springy rubberized ground.
I remember when they replaced the, so I grew up next to a park, in Huntington. I was very lucky to grow up, a 3-minute walk from that park, and it had a big, beautiful playground. And they have renovated that playground so many times since I lived there, adding that springy ground, adding a zip line. There was a huge, huge like sand pit for kids to play in. And there was like a cement like tunnel you could go in underground. There was so much stuff. It was a dope playground.
I love the spirit of it. I love the kind of adventure element.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of really appreciate it's, you know, it's kind of where you build a little ninja warrior.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Did you have a playground sort of activity you were fond of in school?
I liked a lot of like hot lava, don't touch the ground and those little mazes.
Okay.
That was fun. Crawling to the top of the slide where the little thing is and just reading all the graffiti.
Oh, that's fun. I remember elementary school.
Oh, and the tire swing, Natch.
Oh, you got to.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in middle school, I did a LARP with my friend Taylor for Final Fantasy IV on the big toy, which I've said before and you've chastised
me. I actually Googled that. So that is actually like the official name of those big structures is the big toy.
Good.
Yeah.
Then I chastise you.
We just never called it that where I grew up.
And we would play Final Fantasy up there, and I had a ring pop. I remember this very clearly. I had a ring pop, but it was like a magic ring that could shoot fire out of it. It was fun to have, I guess I burned him in the game. That's not as fun. But anyway, I like to play sort of in my own mind. So this is sort of going back to the friendship segment and explaining why I didn't have very much of it. But now it's getting hard to think about. So let's, is that it?
That was my trip to the playground, yeah.
It was fun. Uh-huh. I think going to the City Museum in St. Louis reminded me of, yes, like how much I love like playing around on big objects.
Yeah, just climbing and sliding and like being up high and getting to kind of use your muscles in ways you don't normally.
It's good for you.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what I always want hiking to be. But then hiking, it's never planned out, is it? There's always like that one root on the ground that's going to like pop your ankle a little bit. And it's like that would never happen on a playground.
Well, it definitely would happen on a playground, I think.
No, because it's all flat and safe. It's safe, fun. It's safe, flat, fun for adults. thank you so much for listening to Wonderful.
And can I hear what the listeners sent in?
Yeah, we skipped it last week because we just were completely...
Did we really?
We really did. I felt terrible. But yeah, the listeners sent in some... I don't know if it was last week. Recently, I know we recently skipped it. Yeah, so Catherine says, I love watching experts at work. It's truly satisfying and inspiring to watch a master chef or craftsperson do the thing that they're really, really good at. I agree with this wholeheartedly.
Yes, this is kind of our whole thing with reality competitions, I think.
Sure, and I mean, I also watch like YouTube videos of just like, you know, people who put the pizza boxes together super good. Or like
if you
street
go
food people.
To like a Silver Dollar City and watch somebody blow glass.
Oh, so dope.
That's also nice.
Corinna says, Taryn Killam's Robin tribute on YouTube. I was listening to Robin's new single when I remembered that this, and it's a link to that Taryn Killam video, happened in 2011, simpler times. Taryn, in a crop jacket and tight pants, busting a move to Robin's Call Your Girlfriend while Bobby Moynihan shines a flashlight in the doorway. Bonus wonder, the song is still a bop. I don't know if you've seen this video.
I forgot about that.
The original, the song is fucking great. The music video is great. And then basically Taryn Killam, when he was on SNL in 2011, and like a whole big room full of SNL like cast people, it was a writing night, and so it was like 4:30 a.m. and they just recreated the whole music video shot for shot in kind of perfect synchronicity.
Do you remember the Halloween that I was Robin?
Oh,
from
yeah,
that video?
That's yeah. True. Yeah, it's a really, really good video. Mm-hmm. I love it very much. Tessie says, you know, when you're hiking in the woods, I definitely copied and pasted this into my document earlier. I guess I forgot. You know, when you're hiking in the woods and you notice that the tree roots have grown in a certain way so that it looks like stairs? When I was a little kid, I went on hikes and I used to think to myself that they were magic trails made by fairies or something. When I see them nowadays, I just think it's really cool. Like the trees just wanted you to have an easier time climbing that hill. Thanks, trees. Just wonderful work you're doing out there, ladies.
Oh my gosh, that's really nice.
That's really nice. I'm sorry I talked
like,
shit about tree roots.
It really conjures
roots.
Like a very specific visual for me.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. Really back to that same park that I grew up next to. I don't think I give that park enough credit. It was formative. Just like your church. I think that's it. Thank you to Bowen and Augustus for the use of our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. Let's say a few words about Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org is home to wonderful, positive podcasts that can teach you a lot and make you laugh. I always turn to that website every single day, just looking to see what's going on.
I'm constantly refreshing it, looking for mm-hmm. new podcasts and mm-hmm. new lessons. They have shows like Tights and Fights and Stop Podcasting Yourself. And
oh, I've been wanting to listen to the new Tights and Fights. Because Open Mike Eagle actually participated in a wrestling match.
That's awesome.
I'm very curious about it.
It's all at MaximumFun.org. We have other stuff at McElroyShows.com. Go buy the Sawbones book. Go to bit.ly/Sawbones book. Now it's really, really great. And you're just going to love the hell out of it. I think that's it, huh?
That is it.
Are there any other deep voice songs you want me to cover for you?
Oh my gosh. Can you sing Barbie Girl by Aqua?
I'm a Barbie girl in a Barbie world. Wow, that's so low. I cannot believe how freaking low that is. Life's fantastic when it's plastic. That's fucking great, baby. I have to record this right now. It's never going to be like this again. You can comb my hair, undress me any... Oh, wow. That song is problematic as hell. Goodbye. Money won't pay.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
The secret is out. I, Open Mike Eagle, officially had a wrestling match. And on the next Tyson Fights, I'm talking all about it. From the rap battles that got it started.
Open Mike, you ain't ready.
And to how I hurt myself in ways I didn't know I could. That day and the day before, I got so many texts from people who really care about me who were like, please don't break your neck. The only place you can get the full story is on the newest episode of Tights and Fights. Find it on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get podcasts.